We are back. Avideh Shoshani is our guest today, and she's the author of two books of poetry and an upcoming book called Scarlet Tears. She is a Sufi, a practicing Sufi. She is a scholar of Persian poetry, and she's telling us some of the roots of Persian thought which have permeated our society, and not a moment too soon. I think Eastern thought is becoming Western thought. Do you see that happening, that there are spiritual beliefs that have now infiltrated our own belief system in the West?
The West has been influenced significantly by Eastern thought during the past probably 50 years, if we want to put a kind of a timeline on it. But Sufism has been on the rise in the West simply because it's so tangible to us. It's what belongs to our own soul. I think when we hear Rumi or we hear Hafiz or any of the other Sufis, we resonate with what they're saying because we know it belongs to us. It's what our soul already knows. But they voiced it, and when they have voiced it, we know it. And so this is why it appeals to us, because it's a song of our own soul.
And once you told me that the direct route to God was the straight line,
yes,
from the heart.
From the heart.
And that was the fastest. And that's a very good explanation of Sufism to me. That explains so much to me.
There's a beautiful verse in the Quran that says, that God says to us, I'm closer to you than your jugular vein. So I always keep that in mind whenever, you know, we all have our ups and downs and our moments of darkness, perhaps. And then whenever I remember the verse and I say, well, God has always said, I'm closer to you than your jugular vein. So there's really nowhere else to go but go deep within myself and find that peace and that love within myself.
Her name is Avideh Shoshani, and we are talking about other poets as well. Hafiz is someone you have spoken about at the Goethe Institute. I heard a lecture that you gave, and also at St. Mary's College. And will you be, I think he's one person that is just now coming into light here in the Western world of academia and poetry. Who was he?
Hafiz, they've called him the tongue of the unseen, the interpreter of the mysteries, the unrivaled master of Persian lyric, and the Persian language's most read and quoted poet. Every household in Iran has a book of Hafiz. Sometimes the book of Hafiz, his book of ghazals, that consists of 500 ghazals, is used as an oracle for lovers especially. You know, they consult it to see what their fate will be. Because he can be interpreted on so many different levels. As I mentioned, Persian is a genderless language, so you can interpret it whichever way you want. But he is so beautiful in terms of the music of his poetry, the way he places words together. It's like each one is really like a perfect diamond that shines and gives you luminous thoughts and ideas. And he's not as prolific as Rumi. He's written only 500 ghazals, but each one is a gem.
I have to ask you about a pronunciation, because to our graduate students, they study the Persian form ghazal.
Yes.
And that's what they call it.
Yes.
And you, how is the correct pronunciation?
Ghazal.
So that is in every person's home in Iran?
The Divan-e Hafiz. We call it Divan-e Hafiz. Everybody has Hafiz. People have it memorized. They quote Hafiz all the time.
Is everyone literate?
Even if you're not literate, there's been a standing tradition in Iran that people quote the poets if they want to respond to someone. For example, if a father wants to give a lesson to a child, they quote from Sa'di, for example, because he's known for his wonderful lessons in life and things. But poetry is such a long tradition in Persia, in Iran, that
we raise children by that.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes.
That is,
yes.
It is instilled in every vein.
Yes, it is instilled in every vein.
So Hafiz is a different century from Rumi.
Yes, he was born in 13. There are different dates of his exact birth, but around 1320.
And where did he live?
In Shiraz.
You've been there.
I have been there, and there's a beautiful mausoleum built for him there where people go visit. It's a shrine. Shiraz is a beautiful city.
Is that the city of flowers?
Yes, it is. It's a city of flowers and wine and song and poetry, and it's where Persepolis is.
Oh, read us some, Hafiz.
I would love to. I just love to the music of his poetry.
And it's translated, of course, so we can't even imagine what it might be in the original, but you'll give us a taste.
I'll give you a taste. I'll read a few lines, and I'll read a few lines in English so you can see the difference.
Wonderful.
Really, Hafiz can't be translated because it's impossible to bring the music of his poetry into English. صبحدم مرغ چمن با گل نوخاسته گفت ناز کم کن که در این باغ بسی چون تو شکفت گل بخندید که از راست نرنجیم ولی هیچ عاشق سخن سخت به معشوق نگفت. This is so beautiful. He says, at dawn the nightingale spoke to the newly risen rose. Don't put on airs, for many like you have opened in this garden. The rose laughed. The truth does not offend, but never has a lover spoken harshly to his love.
Your face lights up when you read this.
I love Hafiz. But, you know, the story of the nightingale and the rose is in all Persian poetry. The rose is really the beloved, and the nightingale is the lover. So it's this whole thing between the nightingale and the rose.
Oh,
yeah.
So that's the recurring imagery.
Imagery.
This is why it is so easy to expect this to be about romantic poetry, because someone can extrapolate that this is a love song, can't they? I mean, it gives itself to romance.
That's why they wrote like this, because of the clerics of the time, you know, the Orthodox clergy. They would hide their sentiments for the beloved through their poetry like this.
Because the clerics wanted it to go through orthodoxy?
Well, because they're hardliners. They don't...
Hardliners.
Hardliners.
They wanted to go around the clerics. That's so good.
So this is. I'll read you another one. This is another poem that I really love. I'll read you all of this. Is that all right?
Is it in English and Persian?
Yes.
Good.
زلف آشفته و خوی کرده و خندان لب و مست پیرهن چاک و غزل خان و صراحی در دست نرگسش عربده جوی و لبش افسون کنان نیمه شب دوش به بالین من آمد بنشست سر فراگوش من آورد به آواز حزین گفت که عاشقت دیرینه من خوابت هست؟ عاشقی را که چنین ساغر شبگیر دهند کافر عشق بود گر نشود باده پرست برو ای زاهد و بر درد کشان خورده مگیر که ندادند جز این تحفه مواروز الست آنچه او ریخ به پیمانه ما نوشیدیم اگر از خمر بهشت و گر از باده مست خنده جام می و زلف گرهگیر نگار ای بسا توبه که چون توبه حافظ بشکست. As you notice, his name comes at the end. This is in Persian called takhallus. It's the signature of the poet in his own poem that comes within his poetry in the ghazal.
You do not do that, though.
Well, this is especially the lyric verse. This is.
Oh, in the lyric verse,
yes.
Always they put their signature at the
end?
Ah, that is something. Well, when I hear that, it is almost as if I understand it, because the spirit does transcend language, doesn't it?
It does. This is the key. This is the key to Persian mystical poetry, because often my non-Persian friends have told me when they listen to the poetry
being read. We get the meaning.
Yes, because the heart understands it.
As far as the words go, I was wondering if at that time poetry was called poetry, because It was called poetry?
Yes, of course.
Even
it's
not
a long
ghazals?
Tradition.
They were, so poetry in the Persian word, there must be many words for poetry.
It's usually sher.
Uh-huh. And that
but then
is
this
from
performs
the
rubaiyat or the ghazal or the masnavi. It depends. There are different forms of poetry. But
there are conventions.
Yes.
As we have. And now everyone is borrowing them. You know, every graduate student tries to write a ghazal, which is ghazal. I've learned to say it. And I think that that's good news. Don't you think there's something exciting about that?
As long as it comes from the heart, it's great.
Ah, there you got it. I read some that was did not start there.
It doesn't
started
matter.
In the head.
It doesn't matter, but you know, Hafiz is a master craftsman of words. And he's just eloquent.
Let's have some more. Okay. This is Avi Dejashani, Persian scholar who has a PhD in Sufism and is a poet in her own right. And we're at the Library of Congress.
ای هدهد سبا به سبا می فرستمت بنگر که از کجا به کجا می فرستمت حیف است طایری چتو در خاکدان غم زینجا به آشیان وفا می فرستمت در راه عشق مرحله قرب و بود نیست می بینمت عیان و دعا می فرستمت هر صبح و شام قافله ای از دعای خیر در صحبت شمال و سبا می فرستمد تا لشکر غمت نکند ملک دل خراب جان عزیز خود به نوا می فرستمد ای غایب از نظر که شدی هم نشین دل می گویمت دعا و ثنا می فرستمد
Will you give this English then?
Yes. This translation is by Elizabeth Gray. O hoopoe of the dawn wind, I send you to Sheba from here. See where I send you. It's a shame a bird like you in this crumbling ruin of sorrow. From here I send you to the nest of loyalty.
Hmm.
On the path of love there is no station of near and far. I can see you clearly and send off a prayer to you. Morning and evening, I send you a caravan of prayers as companions of the east wind and the north wind. Until the army of sorrow lays waste the kingdom of my heart, I will send my dear life to you as a train of provisions.
The hoopoe, is that a mythical bird?
The hoopoe is a mythical bird, and it has a long standing in Persian poetry.
I've never heard of it except in poetry.
It's called in Persian Hudhud. And it's said that the hoopoe was a friend of King Solomon. And King Solomon, we knew that, understood the language of the birds.
Mm.
And it was the hoopoe that first brought Solomon news of the Queen of Sheba. And there's a verse in the Quran about that, about the Solomon and Queen of Sheba. But in Persian poetry, the hoopoe is the go-between. It's the bird that leads the lover to the beloved.
Oh.
And this is seen especially in Attar's Conference of the Birds, where the hoopoe gathers all the birds in the forest and says, everybody has a king, so we must go in search of our king. So the birds gather, and so the hoopoe wants to take them to their king, called Simurgh. And Simurgh, in Persian, it's the mythical bird. It's the mythical bird that resides on that mythical mountain.
I hope I don't throw you a curve. But I remember when you were at a conflict resolution conference, and there was a group that needed to come together. And I think that you used the concept of birds to
yes.
bring together disparate people who could not be of like minds. If my memory is right, this was a national conference, and you attributed to each person in the conflict a different bird.
Yes.
We won't have to go into it too much further, but am I right?
Yes, you are right.
And you got it from this
philosophy. I got it from this because it's so appropriate because we can apply this concept in everyday life.
So your conflict resolutions that you act out in the world are based in Sufism.
They are. I mean, my perspective is that of Sufism in life.
And I look at your resume and see that you are the past board chair of Refugee Women in Development. So we can see that you apply principles in the real world with its real earth and real trees, although these things sound very abstract, you apply them to daily intervention, to conflict resolutions, and you use your philosophy. I wanted to make that clear.
Yes, that's really true. I go by one of the most beautiful sayings of the Prophet Muhammad. He said that people are like mines, gold, silver, jewel. Excavate their goodness so you may have peace.
And for the audience, who was Muhammad?
Muhammad is the Prophet of Islam through whom the holy book, the Quran, was revealed.
And explain what the Quran is.
The Quran is the holy book of the Muslims, and it was revealed, it was through revelation. It was not any other way but through revelation, through the Prophet Muhammad.
This is a great foundation you've given us. In a short time, I think that we have the essence, which is really what you're all about, making essence and thought forms realities. So we'll shift to your own poetry, because I'm beginning to see more and more the way that it was born. I also know your poetry intimately, but it's nice to hear it in reference to historical past, and I get so much more out of it. So we're going to shift gears into Avide Shoshani's own work, and it seems to me that you're premiering some work today.
Yes.
Okay, so you're reading new work from Scarlet Tears, which is probably going to be published in 2006?
Yes, 2006.
Mm-hmm. We're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. And this is a program we've never had before, and I really love it a lot.
This poem is called Midnight Sky. I trace through the midnight sky the wanderings of my soul towards you, my beloved God. Each dawn I awake to the fragrance that seamlessly steals its way through the invisible slumber that subdues my prayerful heart. And I know that the wings of time once again will ring the bells that take my soul through the labyrinth of the world. But I don't mind, for my soul knows that once again I shall trace through the midnight sky the wanderings of my soul towards you, my beloved God.
Muhammad's life on earth must have been, what years, predating these Persian
poets? He was born around 570. Mm.
And then everything that comes after that obviously harks back to
of
Muhammad.
Course, yes.
Absolutely.
Hafiz, for example, was given the name Hafiz because he had the whole Quran memorized, and they said at least 14 different ways.
He memorized the Quran 14
different
ways.
This is what it said, but at least one way.
Read us some more of you. Avide Shoshani.
In my bosom, there's a place called Harbor of Hope, and within it is an intimate meeting place called Island of Faith, secured by the anchorage of belief and adorned with the courage to hope, faith to trust, and belief to share. Here, children of theory are reared in the bosom of radiance. Their lyrical bodies are dipped in the pool of wisdom, scented with the hues of sweet innocence, the halo of enchantment, and the fragrance of love. Here, my precious one, I will rear you and nurture you. Here, my child, no one can hurt you. No one will hurt you. Here in my bosom, there's a place called.
Avide, what do you wish people would feel when they hear your new work, which is dedicated to the saving of children?
You know, when I look at the world and when I look at what's happening to children, my only wish is for us adults to try to preserve innocence. Because I believe when we look at children, they are the mirror of our soul, their innocence. And my only wish is to do something so we can preserve the innocence of children.
Do you think the poetry can persuade anyone, or can it reach people? Or isn't that the purpose?
Well, for example, when I look at Rumi's work, he never intended to write poetry. It came through him out of a state of ecstasy. But look what it's done. It's transforming people today. He didn't intend to transform people. I mean, perhaps his Masnavi is a book that teaches his students and others. But you know, it's when we write from our soul, when we write from our heart, I think it reaches a heart. We don't have to try very hard to reach people.
Were there lots of Persian poets that we don't know about before Rumi and Hafiz?
Yes, of course.
So it's just the luck of the draw of who got documented and who got passed down?
Well, Rumi is very special. Mm-hmm. Rumi is a grand, grand master. And there are others with Sana'i, of course, and there are many others. Iran is really considered as the cradle of Sufism, where many, many Sufi poets...
You were born in Tehran.
Yes, I was.
If you went back to Tehran today, what would you see?
I think that so much has changed. I haven't been there for a very, very long time.
But the spirit of the people, do you feel that it's positive, that these poets are still influencing people? They're still in the home?
Of course.
Oh, well, that's good news.
Of course. You know, there was a rise in reading Sufi poets, in Sufism in Iran after the revolution that took place, simply because I think people yearn for the heart that they want to connect with, the very heart of Islam that they want to connect with.
That's interesting. So that after the revolution, which was what, in the 70s?
79.
Yes. Then that was... we had a resurgence of spiritual growth.
Yes.
Oh, that's, I did not know that. That's good.
Resurgence going towards the mystic.
Towards the mystics of Islam.
The mystics of Islam.
Oh, away from the brick mosque? Or is there still room for mysticism within the mosque? There is, because you went to Mecca. And there was a, you visited the sites, you visited physical buildings.
I did.
And so therefore there are structures that embody.
Of course there are structures. There are many structures.
But hierarchy sometimes gets in the way.
I think focus on too many rules gets in the way. And I think we lose our focus, which should be God and not the rules.
Sufism keeps this alive.
Sufism keeps the heart alive. Sufism is really what the Prophet taught. It's nothing other than what the Prophet lived by.
That is a good thing to know.
The rose, for example, is the red rose, a beautiful, fragrant red rose, is the flower of the Prophet.
And the nightingale is the seeker.
And the seeker who can't do without the rose.
We have to have more of Avi Day. Here's her own work.
There's a time before sunrise and a time before sunset, when the horizon and the earth disappear one into the other, remaining as a single thread of mist. These are the moments when the longing in my heart is the greatest for you, my beloved.
Do you wake to pray in the morning?
Yes, I wake up around 4:30 in the morning.
And when is the time that writing intersects with prayer?
I have no idea.
In other words, you trance all day.
Whenever something comes to me, I just scribble it down.
And you are in a state of acceptance.
Acceptance, yes.
So that there isn't... Discipline means being a disciple to. And so you are truly a disciple to having anything come to you.
Yes, I'm very open. And I'm very open, yes.
We're seeing that now. Do you suppose... Well, that's in the tradition too. Because Rumi just... reached ecstasy, and then he verbalized it. And so he was just always open to the experience.
The whole point of Sufism is to become empty of yourself and filled with God. This is the whole purpose. The whole purpose is to dissolve in God. And Rumi symbolizes this to its height.
Did Hafiz have a family and children?
Yes, he had one son. He was married. He was born, as I mentioned, in Shiraz. His father died when he was very young and left a lot of debt behind. So Hafiz and his mother went and stayed with his uncle. And, you know, he left school and he started working. And so whatever he studied, he would hear his father's memorization of the Quran, recitation of the Quran. And then later on, he just learned on his own, you know. He was just brilliant.
I happen to know that you know some of the Quran, too. We won't make you do it publicly, but I think that that is all part of the package.
It's part of the package. You are absolutely right.
So please read us some more of your packaging, which
is my packaging,
putting the soul on paper. No, not easy, not hard, just what you do. And she began in Iran, and she's ending with us in Washington, D.C.
Will you weep with me? Will you weep with me when I weep inside you? O ache of my heart, where the full moon of darkness is set, where the musk no longer sings, where my songs of lust lost their scarlet blush. Where are the verdant meadows that brought news of the nocturnal visits? Where are the promised visitations of ecstasy that my heart conversed with? Where are the flames of longing that betrayed my rapturous love? Where is that wine of intimacy that once embraced my soul? Will you weep with me when I weep inside you? I said to the wind, will you touch my heart again? I begged the fire, I prostrated before the sun, the new moon, and the stars. Has the universe collapsed? Can't anyone hear me? Shall I weep alone? The sun closes its doors, the moon splits and breaks into shadows. The stars converge and form a crescent in remembrance of days where shadows were not born.
Avide, why don't you translate your own poetry into Persian? Is there no reason to do that?
I have never thought of it.
Well, we're thinking of it right now. Would that not be excellent? You have spent so many years in solitude, isolation, translating mystical texts. I mean, I knew you in the 80s. I knew when you were spending hundreds of hours poring over things to make them apparent to the present-day society. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have a bilingual, present-day edition of your own poetry with Farsi? Is that much different from Persian?
No, Persian and Farsi are
exactly the same.
No, Persian is another word for Farsi.
I see.
Yes.
But this is a great project. Is it hard?
Well, you know, I guess you know me well enough to know that I don't consider myself as a poet or anything like that. And it seems to me it's a little bit presumptuous to even think about doing that.
I see. So if you took your ego out of the middle of it, which you've already told me that everything works when we do that, and I believe it, then it would just be simply to render it upon the page to back to its original purpose, back to a dedication to the masters. It would be sort of a devotional thing.
Probably.
It would be great. Even one poem. I would really love to see one poem of yours.
I think, you know, the Promised Paradise has been translated into Persian and into French.
I do know that. And but you did not do it.
No, I had no idea it was being done.
That is a beautiful book. I'd like to hear some more.
Okay, I'm going to read this because a friend of mine really loves this poem, so I'm just going to read it. Little raindrop, no one told you what your fate would be. No one warned you. You crashed and shattered into infinite pieces, your remnants moving along aimless rivulets. Mother Moon keeps watch over the midnight sky as Father Sun prepares for the forthcoming day. A promise of faith, a renewal of hope. When all promises fail, when the sun and moon fade from the sky, and there's no warmth or light, walk into my heart, little tiny raindrop, and rest.
We're at the Library of Congress with Avide Shoshani, and this will be, I think, our final poem.
O beloved, you have said, remember me, and I will remember you. We are in your remembrance. O beloved, remember us. Lift the veil of separation so we may behold your face. Wasn't it your woman saint who said, if I worship you for the promise of paradise, then deny me paradise. If I worship you in fear of hell, then burn me in hell. But if I love you for you, then do not deny me your beauteous face. O beloved, you are the light of the heavens and the earth, a light luminous of its own being, neither Eastern nor Western, self-subsisting. O beloved, you have said, lift the veil of selfhood to see that you are no other than I. You are my light. Lift the veil of ignorance to see that there is no other than I. O beloved, love us, not as we love, but as you love. Bless all your prophets, all 124,000 of them. They are the moons and the stars reflecting the light of your love. You have sent them to us, so through them we may hear of you, draw towards you, and ultimately be dissolved in the fire of your love. O ever eternal Son, burn us until none remains of us, for you are the absolute, the munificent, the tender, the loving, the compassionate, the generous, the subtle. O beloved, remember us, remember me.